This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. Election 2014 is over. It was a very good one for the Republicans. I'm going to take a look at what happened in Southwest Michigan and beyond with Western Michigan University political science professors John Clark and Peter Wielhauer. We'll begin with the 20th state Senate race, where Margaret O'Brien has claimed a 60-vote victory, but Democrat Sean McCann is considering asking for a recount. There was also a Libertarian candidate on the ballot. How big a factor was Lawrence Wenke in this state Senate race?
We know that the county, generally speaking, is competitive. This Kalamazoo City leans toward the Democrats. The rest of the county leans toward Republicans. So it's an evenly balanced county. The county is the entire district now after redistricting. And so we sort of knew this was going to be a close election to begin with. You throw in an additional candidate, and especially an additional candidate that has some name recognition, that has some credibility as a former elected official, and all of a sudden, you know, everything is wide open in the race. And I think that that was reflected in the fact that there was so much money that was poured into this one race as a means of trying to harness that uncertainty, overcome that uncertainty. And the fact that that third candidate was in the race and drew a considerable number of votes, certainly both sides could probably say, well, if it weren't for the Wenke candidacy, you know, things would have turned out differently. And indeed, they would have. It's not necessarily clear, to me at least, how they would have turned out. I suspect that there were a number of folks who voted for Lawrence Wenke who would not have voted for either of the other two candidates. And it's probably also the case that he drew votes from both candidates.
I think that's the case, but I also would kind of take a counter argument that when Libertarians run, the conventional wisdom is that they tend to draw disproportionately from Republican candidates. And so if that's the case in this particular district, then about 2/3 of Wenke's votes might have come from Margaret O'Brien. About 1/3 would have come from Sean McCann, which would have made this much more clear outcome, all things considered, much more like the outcome that we saw in basically the same district in 2010. We just don't have the detailed information about how those voters were thinking, but that seems to be the conventional wisdom about how Libertarians draw their voting base in these kinds of races.
And it's worth noting that Lawrence Wenke previously held office as a Republican.
And
so to
exactly.
The extent to which that he had a constituency that he could bring to the table, it was likely, at least in part, a Republican constituency.
I think so. And I think that part of this is in talking to some Republicans in the area, one of the things that was working against Margaret O'Brien and probably for Lawrence Wenke is that Margaret O'Brien had taken a few votes in her position as state representative that had angered some Republicans, such as expansion of Medicaid and other areas in which she didn't take the kind of the diehard conservative stance. And one Republican told me that he would have voted for Lawrence Wenke in order to defeat Margaret O'Brien so that the next time around you could get what he called a real Republican in.
4 years from now.
4 years from now.
In theory. I got an email from the Libertarian Party of Southwest Michigan. I'm sure this went to a lot of email boxes around the state, but they were crowing about the fact that Lawrence Wenke had a very good showing, the best ever in Kalamazoo County for a minor party, third party candidate, however you want to term that. And also they noted that Michael Stamfler did fairly well running for state house in the 61st district. I don't know that we can expect a Libertarian to be elected to anything anytime soon, but does this show they're having some influence and perhaps they are nudging the debate one way or another on a number of issues?
I would say yes. I would say that this is not a new phenomenon. As well. I mean, over the years, we've seen that in very close or competitive races, whether it's at the state level or in district levels, we do see Libertarian candidates drawing just enough of a vote to be arguably the tipping point in some of these races. And I think that you'll see that. I think perhaps the growth of the Tea Party kind of having not had a very good year with regard to establishment candidates, that people who would be more inclined to be Tea Party types might be alienated from the establishment Republicans, and so cast their vote for a Libertarian. And I think that makes a lot of sense. In the big picture, Libertarians will not win that many offices simply because of the system of rules that we have in the political system as using single-member districts and a plurality or a first-past-the-post rule. That just keeps third parties from really having the opportunity for victory, but certainly they can be spoilers.
And I think with the two candidates that you mentioned here in Kalamazoo County, they both have substantial name recognition,
exactly.
Substantial government experience. They're not just somebody off the street. They're people who are credible as candidates. And that certainly helped them to draw attention to the kinds of positions that they were advocating.
I had a Libertarian candidate for another office tell me that he did not expect to win, but he said, I think if I get enough votes, they're going to steal some of my ideas. Are they stealing some of the Libertarians' ideas?
Well, that's the tradition of minor parties in the United States, that they are many times not successful in terms of winning elections, but that energy and those ideas become harnessed by one of the major parties. And we've seen that over and over again. That's probably one of the most consistent patterns with regard to minor parties that we've seen over the years.
Yes, but that's only been true for the last 150 years. We can't really generalize.
Indeed.
How much was Michigan part of what appears to have been a pretty big national Republican wave? Rick Snyder won re-election, not as big as he did 4 years ago, but Republicans picked up seats in the state legislature, whereas there was some thought maybe a week ago that they would lose seats in the state house. The Gongwer News Service, pretty respected, which covers the state capitol, indicated there was a path for the Democrats to getting control of the state house. The Republicans, though, did quite well. Is that something we see as part of a national wave that it affects everything down the ballot? Pete?
I think so. I think that there's no question that we've got a much more Republican-looking House of Representatives nationally. We have a much more Republican-looking Senate than we had nationally. We have much more Republican-looking governor's mansions than we did nationally. So I think overall, if you're going to look for a wave, there are two kinds of things that I would look for. One was just an overwhelming vote advantage, which I don't think that we actually saw an overwhelming vote advantage, but you had enough advantage with enough victories in small increments that it just tipped the balance. So the Republicans improved dramatically, I think, over the Democrats just on the increment, not just on the margins, just enough to win these close races. It wasn't a full-scale blowout like we would have seen, for example, in the 1964 election with Lyndon Johnson or 1932 with Franklin Roosevelt.
We've seen a number of wave elections in the last decade. And by comparison, this one's a relatively small wave. And yet it sort of was consistent with the model that we've seen where the party that controls the White House tries to make the election a local election, office by office by office by office. The party that doesn't control the White House wants to make it a national election. They want it to be about the president, whether that president is Barack Obama, or whether that president is George W. Bush, or whether that president is Bill Clinton. The side that wins, and you know the direction of the wave, if there is one, depends in part on who controls that message, which campaigns are more effective. We saw in 2006 and 2008 and 2010, we saw those messages become nationalized. This time around, it happened not perhaps to the extent that it had in those elections, but you know, a week ago, it looked as though in many of these close contexts, the issues that were being discussed were local kinds of issues, statewide issues, even more local than that. And it turns out that, you know, across the country, as Pete said, in relatively small increments, Republicans were effective in doing a better job of making the election about Barack Obama rather than the candidates in the race. That's different, and it's especially different for Republicans than it was in the last 2 years. Republicans nominated some Senate candidates for the United States Senate, that were not especially strong candidates. And to the extent to which in those states the election was about the Republican nominee and about statewide issues, Democrats were successful in holding on to the Senate at a time when most analysts expected them to lose it. This time around, it didn't so much work, in part because of the kinds of candidates that were running, in part because of the sort of the seats that were up on the Senate side. But below that, too, and the fact that the issues became national issues certainly helped the Republicans.
And I would say that looking, for example, at the Senate race here, the fact that it would not be easy for the Republicans to tie Gary Peters specifically to President Obama really helped neutralize that strategy that was used all across the country of tying incumbent Senate Democrats, incumbent House Democrats with the president, who is very unpopular, then I think that made it more possible for him to have a stronger outcome than we might otherwise have expected.
Why do you say it wouldn't be as easy? I mean, Gary Peters voted for Obamacare, for instance, and some other things. He was pretty closely aligned, even campaigned with the president the last weekend before the election.
Yeah, but I think that at the time when people are making their choices about who they're going to vote for, that was not really the dominant message. At the end, that was all about getting out the vote, making sure turnout was right at the end. That's not about persuading people to vote for or against somebody. I think it was harder to make that connection because he, in that office as senator, he was not part of...
You mean as congressman before he became senator.
Right, but he wasn't in the Senate beforehand, and so it made it harder to say, as a senator, he's going to align himself with the president and make that make that really stick hard. I mean, certainly we saw some of that in the campaigning, but I think it was harder to stick with that message and to make that a factor in people's vote choices.
And I think we can contrast the United States Senate race with the 20th District State Senate race that we were talking about earlier. In the 20th District State Senate race, we had candidates with very similar pedigrees. In fact, all three candidates with similar pedigrees in terms of elected experience. The major party candidates, either through money that they raised or money that was spent on their behalf, were very evenly matched. At the statewide level, we didn't so much see that. Certainly, there was money available, particularly early on. But the campaigns were not equal in terms of the way that they were run. And the fact that Gary Peters, by most accounts, ran a very effective campaign, mm-hmm. Terry Lynn Land, by most accounts, did not, really helped to create that separation that we saw that didn't exist at the start of the summer. But as the campaign heated up, Peters continued to pull ahead fairly steadily in small increments. But since, at least June or July.
Yeah,
and then we really started to see the separation by the end of the summer.
Yeah, and I think that's the case. And what I observed is that when I was talking about the election, perhaps with you, with other people, at the beginning of the summer, I was thinking that it could turn out to be a pretty competitive race. Terry Lynn Land was, on paper and based on her previous experience, was a highly credible candidate, perhaps one of the best opportunities the Republicans did have statewide for a visible, credible candidate. It just collapsed over the summer in terms of the effectiveness of her relationships with the media, which maybe didn't affect how the media covered her positively or negatively, but it might have affected the kind of just general orientation of the coverage she would get in a news story. We got a response from Peters. We didn't get a response from Land. Peters showed up. Land didn't show up. And that just sets a negative narrative that consolidated. As people started paying attention, it just simply consolidated into what Michiganders usually do with their Senate races, at least over the last decade, and default to the Democratic candidate.
I think the other thing that the other contrast that we can make with the United States Senate race is with the governor's race, where at the start of the summer, as you said, the Senate race looked like it was going to be incredibly close. The governor's race, not so much. And over the course of the summer, Mark Shower was able to make some ground. He was able to establish better name recognition. And that race turned out to be quite competitive. And within, you know, a few weeks of the election, it looked as though it was going to be a toss-up.
Well, over the several weeks up to the election, all we had a relatively consistent set of polls that consistently had about a 2% advantage for Rick Snyder over Mark Shower. When we got to the final election, people had to make their choice, and ended up being about a 4% difference in terms of the votes cast. But we saw, but that's even that is within the margin of error of all those polls. So it's not that the polls were off. It's just that on average, that Snyder just did just a little bit better, and Shower just a little bit worse than we otherwise might have expected.
And the other thing to keep in mind with pre-election polling is that we don't know for sure who's going to show up on election day. Pollsters have, you know, sort of their own ways of trying to handicap that, mm-hmm. In the sense of you know, is this person, they say they're going to vote, but are they really? You know, what are the demographics of the electorate on election day going to look like? And as you know, Pete's studied this more than most people, what matters is who shows up on election day. And, you know, it may well be the case that some of those people that said to pollsters, yes, I'm going to vote for Mark Shower, didn't actually cast a ballot. And if that's the case, then that relatively small difference from the pre-election polling would be easily accounted for.
The other thing is, I think that the Democrats actually did a pretty good job in terms of their getting out the vote, in terms of what turnout ends up being for them. Even though Shower didn't win as many votes as we otherwise would have expected, what I found really interesting looking at the exit polls is that, in general, pre-election polls had President Obama's approval rating at 38%. But in the exit polls, among the people who actually showed up to vote, his approval rating was 50%. And so I think you had a stronger than expected Democratic showing in across the state, even though it didn't translate into more Democratic victories. My sense is the Democratic margin of victory was helped by the fact that more that the people who actually showed up to vote were slightly more pro-Obama than the people we would otherwise have expected.
This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. We are speaking with Western Michigan University political science professors John Clark and Peter Wielhauer about Tuesday's election here in Michigan and beyond. I want to follow up on the point you just made there, Pete, about the Democratic turnout, because if you look down ballot at State Board of Education, the governing boards for the universities, the Democrats swept those. Now, those aren't high profile, and it's the sort of thing that even the Democrats themselves in their post-election press release buried in about the fifth paragraph. It's not sort of, but I guess I'm wondering, does it show that there were people who turned out at the polls, and this may explain the 50% approval for President Obama, who might normally be inclined to vote for Democrats, but as they looked at those races up the ballot, governor, Congress, state legislature, pulled the Republican lever?
Well, I think it's, I have not looked very in depth at these results, at those other races, but the experience that we can generally say is that those down ballot races, you have a lot of people who simply don't cast votes for them. And so the people who do cast votes are going to be doing so on a much more bread and butter, this is my community, this matters for my kids very directly. And that they're going to be much more inclined to vote with somebody or a party that seems to represent them in terms of these actual bread and butter issues.
I think the other thing that comes into play, certainly here in Michigan, is that voters have the opportunity to vote a straight ticket. And if they do that, then that includes these education boards and whatever else. We know that, generally speaking, Republicans vote for Republican candidates, Democrats vote for Democratic candidates. But the question is, what does everybody else do? And in this election, at the governor's level, for instance, according to the exit polls, Rick Snyder won independents by almost a 2-to-1 margin. Gary Peters also won independents by a smaller margin, but he was able to capture that independent vote. And so I suspect that many of the people who roll off or don't complete the entire ballot are folks for whom Republican and Democratic labels don't have a lot of meaning. Whereas, and this goes back to the point about mobilizing Democrats, for those that are partisan, they're more inclined both to complete the ballot or vote straight ticket. But also that label has some meaning to them in a way that, you know, we just don't have much information about these candidates otherwise.
Yeah, I think that point about the independents and how they voted, and they're much being much less likely to cast a straight fill in that straight ticket bubble, I think it's exactly on point.
And the other thing is that, according to the exit polls, about 40%, almost 40% of voters think of themselves as Democrats, about 30% Republican, about 30% independent. That's not too far off from the pre-election polling that we've seen here in Michigan. We know that this is a competitive state. In part, it's competitive because both parties are able to field good candidates and occasionally win elections. It's not as though one party wins everything. But it's also, among partisans, a slightly Democratic-leaning state. But again, the independents are a big enough chunk of the electorate that it really matters how they vote and whether they vote.
And when we look at the race for governor in terms of these issues, in terms of the partisan breakdown, I think the overriding theme that we can take away is the improvement in Michigan's economy over the last 4 years. Certainly the governor in his campaign ads was consistently hitting his job creation numbers within the state, definitely trying to put a positive spin on everything. I thought Mark Schauer's campaign did a remarkably good job in terms of trying to poke holes in that, especially with regard to the discrepancy in stories over education funding, for example. I thought that the Schauer campaign tended to have the lead in terms of the stories and the narrative about that. But when you look at the Michigan economy, that has to benefit the incumbent governor, and especially when you had late money coming in, really specifically trying to tie Mark Schauer to the Granholm administration, and people's memories of that from an economic standpoint are just not that good.
And also tying him to President Obama and Obamacare from his 2 years in Congress.
Correct.
And I think that's one of the really interesting aspects of this race, that because Mark Schauer had served in Congress, because it was possible to tie him to the president. It was difficult for him to make the case that, in fact, it wasn't Rick Snyder's policies that have improved Michigan's economy. It's the president's policies. We've seen this before, and I think for me the best example is probably Al Gore's campaign in 2000, where Bill Clinton was incredibly unpopular, but his policies and his performance as president were quite popular.
Right.
It was difficult for Al Gore as a sitting vice president to align himself with Clinton's policies without also taking on the baggage of the Clinton presidency itself. And I think that for the Shower campaign, you know, in order to defuse this case that no, in fact, Michigan's not doing that much better than any other state in the country, our economy's rising as the national economy rises. In order to do that, he has to say, me and Barack Obama, or at least that's the way it would be portrayed, at a time that, you know, it doesn't make sense to do that, particularly among the independents that he was trying to win over. And so he was somewhat handicapped in the way that he could make the argument. And I think it probably
worked to Snyder's advantage. Yeah.
And I think that's right. And all the governor has to say is, it doesn't really matter what's going on in the rest of the country. All I really care about is Michigan. And Michigan's doing better. That's all that matters. And that's an effective narrative for the incumbent.
We saw this when Jennifer Granholm ran for re-election.
Yes.
She said, the problem with the Michigan economy isn't Michigan. The problem with the Michigan economy is Washington. And these are the national policies that are really hurting us.
At a time when George W. Bush was very unpopular.
Very unpopular, right. Certainly.
I want to note here that much was made about nationally, some very conservative states approved increases in the minimum wage. At a time when they're voting for Republican candidates, some of whom probably say there shouldn't be a minimum wage at all. And then here in Michigan, there was ballot measures to approve road funding in some counties, including Ottawa, a pretty conservative area of the state. The wolf hunting proposal, to the extent that that breaks down in ideology, the conservatives have been more supportive of the wolf hunt, but voters rejected it. And then there's also the vote may be symbolic, by the way, it may not really matter. Also some additional measures in various communities to decriminalize marijuana. These ballot measures seem to be somewhat at odds with the candidates who won. John, is that something that we should take note of, or is that just fairly common that they're just separate elections?
I think they're separate elections, and I think in many ways what it comes down to is the fact that voters want results. Certainly there are, as we've said before, Republicans that prefer Republican candidates, Democrats that prefer Democratic candidates. But mostly what people want is not partisan bickering. They want their problems to be solved. If they feel as though the people that they're electing are not solving the problems, then they're going to be looking for ways to bypass the elected officials. And I think that's what we've seen in a number of states, and we've certainly seen over time. I think that presents a challenge then for congressional Republicans moving forward, now that they have control of the entire Congress, both the House and the Senate. Can they demonstrate that they can govern? And they haven't demonstrated that over the last couple of years, but they didn't need to because of the fact that there was a Democrat in the White House. There's still
a
Democratic Senate. There's still a Democrat in the White House, but they need to demonstrate this ability to govern, in part to set up their presidential candidate in 2016. My guess is that, to go back to the governor's race, for many of those people who don't think of themselves necessarily as Republicans or Democrats, the fact that Rick Snyder was able to accomplish things and the economy's improving, those two things perhaps go together. And so, you know, to argue for results, the campaign did a great job of talking about not only current results, but results in the future. You know, we've created a new infrastructure that's going to improve the economy for years to come. You haven't seen it yet, but take our word for it. It's going to be better.
Well, and you heard this in the governor's acceptance speech of the election night, in which he returned back to that reinventing Michigan theme, which I hadn't actually heard much about in the last 2 years. We heard a lot when he was running, heard it for the first couple of years of his administration, but he came back to that. He said, we have been reinventing Michigan, and we will continue. And that kind of idea of the future payoff of what he's trying to do was the theme.
And I think in downplaying that during the campaign, in some ways he was trying to tampen expectations that we're in the process of reinventing Michigan. It hasn't been reinvented yet, at least not completely. We're not done.
Right. Because I'm sure he didn't want to express a level of satisfaction with where we were already compared to where we started.
Exactly.
But he also wanted to communicate that general positive trajectory.
Right.
We've got a few minutes left. Republicans obviously had a very good day in Michigan. As we look forward to 2016, Is it fair to wonder, or at least hypothesize here on a Thursday morning, whether or not the Republicans can take some of what they got in 2014 and bring it to 2016 and make Michigan once again a competitive state for president? Because for the last couple of elections, Democrats won the state pretty handily. Or, again, are we talking about very different elections 2 years from now? Pete?
My guess is that Michigan has been pretty strongly trending as a safer and safer Democratic state for the for presidential elections. 10 years ago, 12 years ago, things were more marginal. The Democrat would win by 2 or 3%. But over the last couple of elections, beginning perhaps even in 2004, we had increasing percentages for the Democrat. And I think that that we've seen in previous a couple previous decades. And so my sense is that it's going to be pretty much a Democrats to lose. The Democrats have won Michigan consistently over the last several years, and that's a very strong indicator of in terms of future performance.
And I think it in part has to do with turnout. In Kalamazoo County alone, there were 40,000 fewer voters in 2014 than there were in 2012. Many of those voters are more likely to support Democratic candidates, and that pattern is true not just in Michigan, but statewide. In a presidential election, when more people are mobilized, generally speaking, that helps Democratic candidates, generally speaking. It's not the only thing, certainly,
right.
But all other things held equal, it certainly helps Democrats.
Is there the chance here, and again, we're down just a couple minutes, but that Rick Snyder, perhaps having won re-election in a blue state as a Republican governor, becomes more of a national figure, and could that benefit the GOP in some ways?
That's an interesting question, because certainly his profile is one that would lead to speculation about being a presidential
maybe
vice
a
presidential
running
candidate.
Man. Yeah.
But quite frankly, on the stump, he's not the kind of dynamic campaigner that is going to really attract a national audience, is at least my perception.
Yeah, as I think about the governors of blue, the Republican governors of blue states, and I think about which one of these seems the most promising as a dynamic Republican candidate, he would not be at the top of my list. You know, I think the Republicans would be much more excited about somebody like a Scott Walker from Wisconsin that's been really tried in the battles of politics and the rough and tumble politics of the upper Midwest. I think that he would be a much more attractive candidate than somebody like Rick Snyder, who's a pretty laid back, you know, tough nerd, but he's not, but he has not had to fight those battles in the trenches.
But Walker's a much more polarizing figure as well, and so perhaps a John Kasich, to use another Midwestern governor, someone who's a little more polished in terms of national politics from his short time in Congress, somewhat less controversial, but in many ways no less conservative in terms of his policies than a Scott Walker.
And Ohio's a big state.
And Ohio's a big state with lots of
electoral
votes.
Yeah, that's right.
And it's been a competitive state.
And if you can flip Ohio to the Republican column by nominating a Republican presidential candidate from Ohio, I mean, certainly that looks really, really attractive to the Republicans at the national level. I think he has certain problems as a candidate. He's got been a lot of accusations of corruption in his government. He's angered a lot of Republicans in the base because of his acceptance of some of the national level policies. And so I think that he's got a harder case now to make as a presidential candidate than he did perhaps 4 years ago.
At the same time, voters like results, and to the extent to which, you know, governors have to make hard decisions about governing in a way that many other candidates don't. And while it may hurt him within some parts of the base, it may also help in a broader sense because of the fact that he's done some things that maybe haven't been ideologically pure, but have been to the benefit of voters in his state.
And I'm sorry, we're going to have to leave it there. We've run out of time. Hard to believe. Well, guess what? 2016 is a couple years off, so we'll have to find some more time to talk about that later. We want to thank Western Michigan University political science professors Peter Wheelhauer and John Clark for joining us as we recap the 2014 election. You can find more coverage at wmuk.org. This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans.